Hola mi gente, my name is Jessica Yáñez and I want you to join me for some wine and chisme. The Wine and Chisme podcast was created to amplify voices across communities of color, all while drinking a glass of wine. From wine talk, interviews, and recaps of all things pop culture, join me every Wednesday for the chisme. Please make sure to check out the Wine and Chisme podcast and other amazing podcasts as part of the Latina Podcasters Network.
Mamacita, welcome to the Mamas con Ganas podcast. That's mamas as in, hey mama, y te traemos episodios para que tengas las ganas de motivarte, surgir y triunfar. Don't be a mama con drama, let's be mamas con ganas. I'm your host, Valentina Izarra.
On this episode of the Mamas con Ganas podcast, I'm interviewing Melody Carlson, best-selling author who's written over 250 books. Welcome, Melody, to the Mamas con Ganas podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, I was telling her, you know, I've had authors on my podcast before, but never, ever somebody who's written over 250 books. And I know you told me you stopped counting, right, a while back.
Yes, my husband keeps saying it's 300, and I honestly don't know. And I'm sort of comfortable stopping counting because a number of those were children's books. So I like to just think, you know, that 250 novels for teens and women is probably a little more accurate. But those children's books count too.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, a lot of people, you know, have a dream of writing a book, but then they write one or maybe two, and then that's about it. But for somebody to have so many ideas flowing through them and to also have the discipline and the stamina to maintain that work ethic and to write so much, like I want to delve into that a little bit. Tell us how you got to becoming an author and if this was always a dream of yours or it's sort of, you know, how that evolved, how it came about that you became this best-selling author.
Yeah, well, I had always loved to write, and I can admit it came real easily to me. You know, in school, whenever I got the opportunity for extra credit or a test, whether it was essay or true and false, I'd choose essay. And I just always felt like I could kind of write my way out of everything. And but I didn't really take too much writing classes in college. I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. I ended up, you know, teaching preschool and doing a bunch of other jobs, which actually facilitate writing kind of nicely. But it wasn't until a couple of kids, and they were just kind of preteen. I feel like I got a late start. But anyway, at that point, it's just like something burst inside of me that I'm going to try to publish. I mean, I was doing little things for the local newspaper and the PTA newsletter and, you know, things like that. But I took my ability for granted. And I think a lot of times people have a gift in an area and it's easy to take it for granted because it comes maybe easily to you. So I decided just, you know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to pursue this and take it to the next level. And so I did. I just jumped in, didn't really know what, why, how, but I was enthusiastic.
Amazing. So what did you do first? Did you just start writing and saying, I'm going to write a novel, or did you try to, how did that go about?
Well, honestly, I was running a preschool group home daycare center in my house. We had built on an addition that housed it so I could be home for my boys because they were grade school age at that time. And my time was so limited. I mean, you know, I've got two kids and I was participating in all their stuff and running this little business. And so I just got a yellow legal pad. And while the children were having naps in the afternoon, I just hand wrote a little, like a tween age novel. Didn't really know what I was doing or anything, but just in a short amount of time, I had it done. And I joined a critique group, which where you sit, you know, with a small group of people and you read what you've written. And I got such great encouragement from this group. They're still friends of mine. But so then I was so excited about it and didn't know what to do with it. And I knew I couldn't just send in my yellow legal pad to a publisher. But then my husband, bless his heart, believed in me and got me, let's not tell you how long ago this was. He got me an electronic typewriter that had, it would store like 1,000 words, and then you hit print and it would print it out, and then you do another 1,000. And then, so I did a whole book on that, just one at a time, printing out these pages. And then from that, my husband again encouraged me to get a computer, and computers were really new at the time. And so we got a, you know, one of those old dinosaur computers, and I started writing on that, which, gosh, that made it so much easier. And then I realized early on that I wrote really fast, and it's because I didn't have very much time. So I was kind of trying to make the most of it. And I went to a writer's conference, and I, at that first conference, I met the editor that she just passed away. I stuck with her for all those years. And she ended up publishing about 50 of my books, and including she published my first book. So that was a pretty important relationship. But by the time I actually started getting published, I had a little stockpile of about 5 books fully written.
Amazing. And I love how you say that, you know, you were writing really fast, trying to take advantage of the little time that you have had.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people have the excuse, right? They say, oh, I want to write a book, but I just don't have any time. And they fantasize about a moment in time where they'll just have so much ample time available to them, or they get just to just have the luxury of sitting down and writing. But the way that you put it seems so relatable, because I think so many of us are so busy with our lives, but then we have these dreams, right, on the side, and we feel like we can't pursue them because we have that excuse in our heads that's telling us, oh, we don't have enough time. We don't have enough time.
Yes, I know. And so now, you know, I did become a full-time writer, oh gosh, after a few years. I actually worked in the publishing industry for about 3 years too, which really helped me. I mean, it was like an education that I got paid for. But when I turned full-time, people would kind of act like, well, of course you can write because you have, you know, you're writing full-time. But I could always go back and say, well, no, that's not how it started. When I started, I had very little time. I just wanted to do it. And I do tell people, if you really want to do it, you will make the time. And the less you talk about it, the more you do it, the sooner you'll get there.
It's so amazing. It's so true. The less you talk about it and the more you do it. I completely agree. It's very, because that's life, right? Otherwise, life just passes us by and then we don't get to do all the things that we talk about doing.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, because I have actually seen people who say, I want to be a writer, and they will talk it to death. You know, it's just like, and they'll talk about their book idea to death. And then when they actually sit down to do it, it's like the life has gone out of it because they wasted all that energy just talking. And it's a very real thing. And I always tell authors or wannabe authors, you know, keep some things to yourself and then just do it. Because, and I think it's true with a lot of things like art and lots of things, music, just keep it to yourself for a little while and then do it.
Yeah. And execute on it. Absolutely. As actors, I really, you know, I'm an actor, and also that applies. Sometimes you just have to stop talking and just start doing, take the classes, do whatever it is that you need to do in order to get moving.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you keep the ideas flowing? Because a lot of people talk about writer's block. How do you permit the ideas to flow through?
Yeah. Well, early on, I told myself there was no such thing as writer's block. I know people get it, but I just is like, nope, there, it doesn't exist. And ideas to me are as limited as there are people on the planet, because I honestly feel like I could sit down with any one person and talk to them long enough that a story idea would emerge from that. You know, I wouldn't really want to write all the stories, but you know, it just shows how unlimited creativity can be if you believe in it and you go for it. And yeah, so.
I love that. That's like a super powerful belief system. And wow, that's huge right there. Because a lot of us also, that's another excuse people make. Oh, you know, they have writer's block and then they can't. But you're just saying you have this belief system that just, there is an unlimited amount of ideas that can flow through. And obviously, if you believe in that, then that's what comes to you and you just let it flow. That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, occasionally, and it's not very often, I might get a little bit stumped just, you know, and sometimes I'll just, you know, walk away and then come back and it comes to me, or else sometimes I'll just write something that seemingly has nothing to do with what I'm writing, you know, and then I just have to kind of write my way out of it. And then it might end up becoming a real part of the story, or else it just generates another, you know, idea. So, but I just feel like as soon as you give that writer's block room, it will move in, you know? And so it's like, don't do it. Don't. Yeah.
Such a good advice. Such a good advice. Now, some of your books have become movies. And actually, so Mamacita, I met Melody because the movie that is about to be released on March 15th, where I was part of the cast of the movie, Finding Love in Sisters, the movie was inspired by Melody's book. So tell us about how it came about that, like, how does it happen that all of a sudden one of your books becomes a movie?
Well, there's a myriad of ways that happens. Sometimes somebody will just read a book and then they'll approach either the publisher, my agent, or myself and ask, you know, about getting rights to it. And I love to do that. I do options for pretty, yeah, I try to make it affordable to whatever the situation is. I know there's a lot of low budget films. The first option that I ever really got going was with Lifetime, and it ended up after a while just fizzling, but I've had options over all kinds of things, everything. I mean, and they're still out there, a lot of things, but what my first movie was with Hallmark, and it was called All Summer Long, and I think it's actually still playing, and it involves a ship, and it's like a dinner ship. And when it got made, I actually went up and watched it because that was my first real one that actually happened. And it was exciting, and I loved, you know, what they were doing. I fell in love with the ship and the actors were fabulous, but I wasn't in love with this script, I will admit. And I thought, you know, I think I could have done that. And I had taken a class at one point in time, but I had actually adapted one of my own books, but I hadn't done anything with it. But I thought, okay, next book that I do, I'm going to adapt it. So the next book was called The Happy Camper. And I went ahead and just adapted this script as soon as I was done, and it sold, and it became my next movie, and it was with UpTV, The Happy Camper, and it's still playing too. So that's kind of fun.
That's awesome. I love that. Now, how would you describe the genre of your books? Because I did see that you were also described as a Christian author, right? So would you say it's sort of like a happy endings? Like, how would you describe the genre of your books?
Well, there are a lot of different genres, which kind of frustrates publishers a little bit because they want to pigeonhole you into just one. But I mean, I've run Romantic Times Awards, and I won a Rita Award real early on. But then I've been told by other authors that I don't really write a romance book, but I do write books that have a love storyline. But I've also written a lot of books early in my career on issues. You know, I feel like I've written about almost every mental illness there is. And I do have those into happily because I just want to give hope. I mean, I don't know if you can call it happy, but you know, it's just like, I want to give a resolution, and I involve God in those stories probably more than any of the others because they're hard stories and they're inspired by people I really know. And, you know, some are relatives. And so I want to offer hope, and I've written a lot of books for teens that are pretty hard hitting because teens kind of want you to tell the truth. And with those, I do end up putting a big dose of spiritual answers, and God is definitely involved. In my lighter hearted stories, like this one that you're doing the movie, you know, it's, I had a little bit more lightly, and the two movies a little bit more lightly. I mean, you know, people pray for things and they hit obstacles and things like that. It is part of every story I tell because I feel like it's organic to me. So it has to show up organically in my writing. And it's surprising. I get letters from readers sometimes that bring up something that I don't even remember really being in the book, you know, that, you know, they might say was life-changing for them. So I just think God works in mysterious ways.
Oh, absolutely. I could tell you some stuff from the movie when we were doing the movie. So let's talk a little bit about Finding Love in Sisters. It's a story about three sisters, and it's set in Sisters, Oregon, which I discovered that there was a city called Sisters. Tell us a little about how you became inspired to write about the three sisters who were sort of drawn apart from the death. You know, they're sort of separated, and then they come together because of the death of their mother.
Right. Yeah, the story, I happen to live in Sisters, and I was actually invited when this series started, this Love Finds You series. And they asked me to do my hometown and sisters because somebody knew I lived here. And so I thought, I have to think of some good storyline because you can't just use a town alone as the meat of your story. So I just thought our mountains, the Three Sisters Mountains, are called Faith, Hope, and Charity. And that's what our town is named after, Faith, Hope, and Charity. And I thought, well, wouldn't it be interesting if there was like a mountain climbing woman that had three daughters and she named them Faith, Hope, and Charity. And Faith is the northern sister. We always kind of call it the older sister, and Hope is the middle sister, and Charity is the youngest sister. I mean, not really as far as the mountains go, but that's how it works in the book. And that's kind of how people look at them too. And I've actually climbed to the top of middle sister and not the others though. And I probably won't try to do that. But so anyway, yeah, the mother ends up dying in a mountain climbing accident. And then the sisters have some troubles that are related to that and also related to a boyfriend that one left behind. And then one of the sisters claimed as her own, and that doesn't make for sisterly love. And I'm not sure how much of my story actually got included in the script because I haven't seen the script. So I'm just talking about
that. Yeah, it's interesting. But I was going to ask about the names. I was wondering if those names were still like true to the original story. So interestingly enough, in the script, they switched it to Spanish. So the family, the movie is written about a Cuban family living in Sisters.
Yeah.
And in your story, it was an Italian family, correct?
Right. Bartoli's.
Yeah.
So that history and the grandma who passes away and kind of brings these sisters back together, because the one that lives out of town really is the main character. And I assume it's like that in the movie.
Yes. Correct. And the sister and the names are, some of them are translated in Spanish. Like my name is Faith in the movie. Espe is Esperanza, which is hope. And then there's Caridad, Cari, which is charity. So it's really interesting. But so I want to tell you a story about what happened during one of the film dates, actually, because we were filming at a church. And it was when we were filming the funeral of the mom scene. And the sisters see each other together for the first time in a long time. And in the rooms in the back, when we were waiting to be filmed on set, literally on the wall of the church where they teach catechism, there was Hope, Faith, and Charity on the wall. And it was one of those moments where we got goosebumps, all of us. We're like, this is so meant to be. It's crazy.
That is cool. I love that story.
Yes. And it was even actually in the order of the sisters, Faith, the oldest sister, which is the one that I played. And then Espe on the top and the center, and she's the main character. And then Charity. It was just incredible. So, you know, that there's a lot, there's definitely God's hands involved in this story.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it.
Yes, it's super exciting. And it's even cooler talking to you now because I had no idea that there were mountains that were, you know, named after Faith, Hope, and Charity. And now I see Faith, Hope, and Charity everywhere. You know, like the other day I went to a casting and there was a sign on the wall and it was Faith, Hope, and Charity. I'm like, it follows me everywhere now.
I think that means something.
Oh, absolutely means something. And I'm so excited to share with my viewers also that the movie is going to come out on March 15th on Tubi. It's also going to be on Canela TV. I'm going to be putting some links for, you know, where like you guys can see it. And it's going to be on mamasconganaspodcast.com/220, mamasconganaspodcast.com/220. So you guys can go and see the movie. It's really a beautiful, heartfelt story. And I love the Finding Love series because I think in this world where there's so much, I don't know, sad and tragic news everywhere, to have these stories that you write that are about hope and family union and like, and faith, you know, it touches my heart. And I feel like it's also movies that I can watch with my children. Melody, tell us like if, you know, for somebody who is perhaps like a younger version of yourself, somebody who wants to be an author, like what's the biggest advice that you would give them?
Well, it sounds over really simple, but I would say just do it. Just do it. And let yourself make mistakes. A lot of people don't think, you know, they think they should do it perfectly the first time, or keep going over it and over it again until it seems perfect to them. And I don't think we can even really know what is, well, there is no perfect, first of all, but I don't think we can even know early in the game, really what makes it better, what makes it perfect until we finish something. And I just say, you know, whether it's a short story or an article or a book, get the whole thing done and then go back and make it better, you know, but just do it and don't talk yourself out of it and turn off. A lot of people have an interior editor, and I say, turn off the interior editor. And it could be whether it was art or music or anything, let the creative juices flow, then go back and tweak it and perfect it, if you will. I don't really like that word perfect, but you know, just go do it.
Yeah, because a lot of people get caught up in the analysis paralysis, right? And then they feel like, oh, well, the first novel that I have, it has to be perfect, perfect, perfect. What you're saying and what I'm hearing is you sort of have to get over it and just like start, right? And just like keep on going and doing it. And I agree. I feel like what we learn from experience, and we can't expect ourselves to be perfect from the first time we do something, right?
Exactly. And how can you learn if you don't experience it? So allow yourself to experience it and allow yourself to make mistakes. And, you know, a true story here, when I first got inspired to write, I was taking my 12-year-old, who was just an avid reader, and he'd read every good thing that I could find in the library and in our house, and he wanted to read Stephen King. Well, I didn't think a 12-year-old was ready for Stephen King. Plus, he had nightmares. So I took him, I said, well, let's just go to a bookstore. And we went to the bookstore, and I started looking through young adult titles, thinking I'd find just some new, fresh things that were appropriate. And they were so dark and hopeless. And to me, they seemed poorly written, too. You know, we stood there and I just kind of read through the first chapter. And finally, I turned to my son and I go, I could write this badly. And he just kind of rolled his eyes and laughed. But I thought, I know it seems like a kind of a low bar, but it's like that helped me to just jump in and, you know, make a mess if I wanted to, just do it. And so, and that as I progressed, I got better.
Yeah. I think a lot of people stop themselves too, because they start comparing themselves with others. And then they think they sort of stop themselves before they even start, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
They get stopped in this, like, I don't know if it's paranoia or, they like feeling like they're going to be like, if they're not perfect, then it's not worth at all to put out their talent. And I've learned throughout the years that sometimes it's definitely not the people that are the most talented that get ahead, but the people that are constantly doing and working and sort of like, not perfecting, but working at their craft, right? Little by little, they chop away.
Yes. And, you know, it's important to be resilient and, you know, develop thick skin, because I don't care what kind of creative endeavor it is, there's always going to be somebody who doesn't like it, you know. And one thing I wouldn't let myself do early on, because I realized what it did to me, was go into bookstores and look at bookshelves that were just bulging with what I felt like too many books, and why does the world need more books? And then look at what I've done, you know, because I've filled bookshelves with my own books. But I still have a hard time going into a bookstore.
Wow. You know, I want to go back though to the rejection part of what you were talking about, because you said you have to grow thick skin. And I absolutely agree. If we don't get over ourselves and if we're not able to face rejection, it's almost like it makes it impossible to do that which we love, right? You were telling me something yesterday about, I forgot how you put it, but you were talking about rejection and if you had taken rejection seriously, and something about the wallpaper. Can you refresh my memory as to what you said? Because I found it absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Well, early in my writing career, we were still sending things in the mail. You know, we weren't emailing. It was hard snail mail. And then they would send back what you sent them with a rejection letter. And I would jokingly say, I have enough rejection letters to wallpaper my bathroom. And I'm pretty sure that I did. I saved that. I think I still have them somewhere. I mean, you know, probably 100, because I just kept trying. And I'll admit, you know, it was hard to walk to the mailbox and you see this yellow envelope. Yellow envelope was always bad news, because it meant they sent all your stuff back. with, you know, sometimes a full rejection letter. Maybe sometimes they were saying, well, we really like what you're doing. We're just not doing anything like that. I got a lot of those. That was encouraging and discouraging. And then sometimes it just be a little slip, like, no, thank you. But yeah, so you just have to get tough. And I still do. I don't even read my own book reviews, like on Amazon and stuff. I encourage people to do them because that helps. But whether they're good or what, that goes kind of for me in one ear and out the other. And then if there's like, I could read like 50 good ones and I hit one bad one, that's all I remember. So I just don't do it. And I tell other writers, if it bothers you, just don't do it. It's like the world is, you know, you can't please all the people all the time.
And what got you through the rejections? Like when you would see the rejections coming in, what would you tell yourself in order to sort of let it go?
Honestly, I would tell myself, I'm just going to write another book. And so I did. That's how come I had 5 books written when I finally started getting published. And people were like, how did you do that? And I'm like, well, I just, you know, the rejection pushed me. It pushed me harder. Like, okay, you didn't like that one. Maybe you'll like this one. And the truth was the industry at that time, and I was writing, aiming at the inspirational market for, at Christian publishers, and they didn't really want to do fiction. And fiction was my first love. And so I was kind of pushing. And finally, what happened was the industry started doing fiction, and then they were like, more, give us more. So I was all ready to go by then.
Wow. It's incredible how we can either be like fueled by rejection and make it something that works for us like you did, or how it could just shut us down.
Yeah.
And it's sort of up to us to decide what we're going to do with it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, you can learn from what you might think of as failure. I mean, those are learning situations, I believe. It might hurt, but you can grow and learn.
Did you ever get letters where they would give you advice and then you'd put that into work in the next novel you were writing?
Yeah, somewhat. But usually at that stage of the game, it was just that it doesn't fit our market plan. It doesn't fit what we're doing, you know, I think I just kept thinking, oh, it will. Someday it will.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting, because there's a belief there. Like, you have a very strong will and like sort of a belief system that underneath everything. And I always say that our powerful beliefs will follow us everywhere we go. It plays out in our lives. At the end of the day, whatever we believe, you know, whether we think we can or we think we can't, we're right.
I agree. I really do. It's like what I've seen about writer's block. If you believe in writer's block, you will have writer's block. And yeah, if you believe you're going to succeed, I know that sounds kind of trite, but I do think it makes a difference.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny because as I'm listening to you, what you do in your career is very similar to actors. We get so much rejection. And if we don't have the ability to sort of let it like roll like water down our back, then I would have quit a million years ago. It's what it is. We just have to push through and do what we love and persist and have faith in ourselves. I think this is such a powerful message.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when you truly are gifted and you are creative, it's like you can't stop it anyway. You know, it's like it just wants to come out. And I think of like, you know, artists, the same thing. And like somebody like Van Gogh, you know, he didn't even really experience success in his lifetime, but he was so successful. I mean, his paintings sell for more than anybody's nowadays, you know. And yeah, so it was his creative genius that pushed him on, just made him keep going. And I think that's true with a lot of, you know, songwriters and whatever, you know, nobody just immediately starts out, you know, famous. Well, I don't know, maybe so.
Oh, no, there's a saying that I love. It says, how many sleepless nights does it take to become an overnight sensation?
I agree. Yeah.
You know, people think, oh, well, that person all of a sudden is famous. Like, no. They've been preparing for that over and over and over and over. And they've gone through so much rejection. And you see that the people that stay there and they keep doing it and they stay at, let's say, at a good level, it's because they've gotten past the, oh, I'm just going to do one thing that's going to be a success and then that's it. And the ones that keep on allowing that creativity to flow can maintain like a career, can actually make a career of their talent for the long run.
Yeah, I agree. It's just that most people don't see that part of it, you know, and they just idealize it and think it came easy. Yeah.
It came easy. Or it's like once you reach a certain, you know, once you have a best-selling novel or once you have a blockbuster movie, that's it. But then after that, like what's next? You know, it's not like everything, all of a sudden, all your problems resolve itself. And if your passion was truly writing or it was acting, you're going to want to keep doing it over and over and over. It's sort of like the journey that you go on.
Yeah, I think it would be so sad if it did end, you know, because then what do you do?
Absolutely. 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 And you know, what you're saying, all of this is a reminder to people, like, if you do have, like you said, that need to let the creativity flow, don't let that inner critic stop you. Because I think that's also what stops a lot of people, right? And you said, like, put that voice away. Don't even give it time. And a lot of us listen to that inner critic, and then that also paralyzes us. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, and then you doubt everything that you're doing instead of knowing and trusting yourself. I think a lot of the process has to do with trusting yourself.
Yeah. And I think also having grace towards yourself, you know, just, you know, like I said, allow yourself to make mistakes and allow yourself not to be perfect and still love that person, love that creative person. And I mean, this is something I've had to work on a lot with myself because I don't tend to have grace towards myself, but I'm working on it.
Yes. We tend to be our harshest critics. I think that's, that's very common, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Melody, tell us where, you know, where we can follow you. We can see all the amazing things that you've done. I mean, I know when I Google you, I mean, you show up everywhere, but let them know of a specific website or something that you want them to maybe follow you or see your information.
Yeah. Admittedly, I'm not a big, I don't do a lot of social networking like I should. I do have an author page on Facebook. Right now, my website is down because of the server and my son, who normally takes care of it, isn't around. And I'm trying to figure that one out. But yeah, if you just go on to Amazon.com, you'll see like quite a few books or any of the stores. It's like you said, you Google it, you're going to find something. So,
yes. Yeah. And like I said, the movie that's coming out, Finding Love and Sisters, inspired by Melody's book, I'm going to be putting the links to that so that you can see it. You can watch it. Watch out for it for March 15th. Thank you so much, Melody, for coming on the podcast and sharing all your wisdom and nuggets with us today.
Thanks for having me. Good luck with the movie.
Thank you so much.
It's Valentina. Espero te gustó este episodio de nuestro podcast. If you liked it, or if any of our content has inspired you in any way, I'd be ever so grateful if you showed some amorcito by reviewing us on iTunes or wherever you listen to us. Every single review will help us reach more mamacitas so they can live their life con muchas ganas. It's because of you, our listeners, that we're able to create contenido para otras Latinas. Un millón de gracias por suscribirte, escuchar y compartir nuestro podcast. Si tienen preguntas, comentarios y más, pueden visitar nuestra página web mamasconganas.com or follow us on social media at mamasconganas. You can also write me directly at info@mamasconganas.com. Hasta la próxima, es Valentina recordándote, don't be a mama con drama. Let's be mamas con ganas. Besitos.